Good morning and welcome to another edition of Weekend Magazine. We're traveling over to Dutchess County today, and we are going to be meeting with Herbert Eberhardt, who's the Supervisory Museum Curator at the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt Presidential Library and Museum. I hear there's a lot going on over there at your museum.
Yeah, this is actually our busiest time of year in the fall. We get about 200,000 visitors a year, but large number who come during September and October especially.
Wow, that's fantastic. So first, anybody that doesn't know where you are, let's start by giving a description of where you are. And
sure. We are in Hyde Park. We're about 4 miles north of Poughkeepsie, right on the Hudson River. The library is located on the estate, the Roosevelt Estate, which is also open to the public. You can come to our site and visit the home of FDR, and then come by the library and museum. We're all very close together right here in the heart of Hyde Park.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hyde Park's a beautiful little town, too, mm-hmm. So that's a nice, you could stay a couple days in that area.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now the so there's a house, there's a museum and library,
mm-hmm.
and are you open every month of the year, or are you seasonal?
Yeah,
or?
We're open year round, so you can come anytime.
Okay, and then every day, and what kind of hours do you have?
We are open every day of the week.
Okay.
We're in the summer months and the fall. We're open. The museum is open 9 to 6.
Okay.
And then we go to 9 to 5 during the winter months.
9 to 5 in the winter. I bet you get a lot of schools coming over there, huh?
Get a lot of students from all over who come here. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, so you have a program for the schools that's different than the tours you're giving to the public, or they...
We have a very active education program. We get a lot of classes that come over here that go and tour the museum, and then they meet with our educators and have classroom activities over in our visitor center. So, yeah, we do a lot of students coming through here every year.
That's fantastic. Now, when somebody comes, do you have a tour, and how long does it last? And talk about your...
Sure. Well, if you come to the site, you first come to our visitor center, and there you can purchase tickets for the museum and for the home.
Uh-huh.
The home is by... you have to go with a guide, basically. A guide will take you through there. But the museum is basically self-guided. You can come and go at your own pace.
All right. That's great. And so you'll have some kind of a little manual or something where you can look at and...
We have a little guide to the museum. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Okay. And then so with the home guide, you don't have to sign up ahead of time. You can just go that day and it goes out at regular intervals maybe?
The tour of the home, yes. That goes at regular intervals. But again, it is a guided tour with a guide who takes you through. But again, the museum, which is really what I'm involved with, you can come and go on your own, and it's self-guided.
Okay, great. Maybe talk a little bit about the collection at the museum. What do you have there?
Well, we were founded in 1941. We were the very first presidential library and museum. It was created by President Roosevelt, and he was a very history-minded person. He wanted to make sure that his records and collections were preserved for history. So when we were created here, he established basically a library where all of his personal and governmental papers would be eventually deposited, along with the papers of a lot of his political associates, family, friends, and also Eleanor Roosevelt, the First Lady. Her papers eventually came here. So it's a wonderful research center for people who want to research the Roosevelt era and the New Deal and World War II. So we have a major research facility where over 1,000 researchers a year come here to do studies on to study these papers for books and articles and things that they're doing. The other part of what Roosevelt created in 1941 was the museum. And that's where most of our visitors, as I say, we get close to 200,000 a year, come. And the museum really has tremendous riches that it draws from our collections that also established by Roosevelt of personal items, everything ranging from clothing to furniture. And we have his Oval Office desk. We have the largest object in the collection is his 1936 Ford Phaeton automobile, which was specially outfitted with hand controls so that he could drive it without the use of his legs, because, of course, President Roosevelt was paralyzed from the waist down at age 39, and he was not able to walk unassisted.
Wow, isn't that something? What caused him to be paralyzed? I've always wondered about that.
Sure. He was 39 years old, and he developed polio.
Oh, wow.
And at the time, there was no cure for that, no vaccine against it, and it left him paralyzed from the waist down. And actually, he was a very young man at the time, and it really caused a crisis in his life. He was sort of out of politics for a period of time, and then eventually comes back and is elected governor of New York, and then subsequently becomes president.
Wow, isn't that something? That's a great thing to know. I never knew that. And now his wife was there was a different site for her, right? She's part of the
yes. Eleanor Roosevelt had a sort of on the edge of the Roosevelt estate. There's a place called Val Kill, and that was sort of her own private sort of cottage over on the edge of the estate. And she lived there after FDR died in 1945. Eleanor Roosevelt lived until 1962, and that was her primary residence up here until her death in 1962. Now, that is also an historic site that's part of the sites here in Hyde Park, and visitors can go out and tour that as well.
Okay, it's not considered part of yours, though. They have to sign up separately there and different
hours?
Well,
you come to the visitor center here on our site, and you can get your tickets to go out there as well. So you come to the central location is our visitor center, and you can that's a place where you can get tickets for the tour of the Roosevelt home, the museum, and also for Val Kill.
Okay, got it. Are there any special papers on display or items that are, really you want to call attention to in the collection?
Well, in our permanent galleries, you'll see lots of original documents, that relate to the story of both Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. For example, just to cite one thing, his famous speech in December 7th, 1941, after we were attacked by Japan at Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt gives his famous speech to Congress where we declare war on Japan. And the draft of that speech, which has FDR's handwritten changes to it, is on display. It's just one of many, many famous documents from our history that are on display here. We also have a changing exhibit gallery where we have shows that are change every year so that there's always something new to see here. Right now, we have an exhibit on display that's been up since April, and it'll be on display till the end of the year that's called The Art of War, American Poster Art, 1941 to 1945. It features over 150 World War II posters that cover all sorts of subjects related to the war effort. We have one of the largest collections of World War II posters in the country. We have over 3,000 in our collection. And so we decided to sort of pick some of the most interesting ones from that collection and put them out on public display.
Wow. So you'll have Rosie the Riveter?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. Rosie the Riveter, there's a very interesting story about that. Everybody knows that poster. But what's interesting is that poster was not really well known during World War II. It was only created in very small numbers by the Westinghouse Company, and they only used it in their factories.
Oh.
It's only in the years after World War II that people picked up on that poster, and now we all know it. But one of the stories that we actually tell in our exhibit is the story of how that poster was really only known generally in the wider audience after the war. One other interesting footnote about that, the woman depicted in the poster, for many, many years, there was all kinds of debate over who the woman in the poster was. And actually, in the last couple of years, that it was finally determined that it was a woman named Naomi Parker Fraley, who worked in a Navy machine shop in California. And interesting footnote, she only died this January.
Wow, she was alive all these years.
Yeah.
Wow, how old was she when she passed,
Oh, gosh, I'd have to look that one up.
Wow,
but
that's phenomenal.
But she did manage, it's great that she lived long enough to finally get the recognition as being the person who inspired the poster.
Yeah, well, she was a strong woman. See that muscle she had. What about, there was a big push to sell war bonds, and there was a famous artist, I don't know his name, who used to do the Uncle Sam posters. Do you have any of his work?
I know the one you're thinking about.
Yeah.
That's an artist named James Montgomery Flagg, and he did probably the most famous military recruitment poster in our history. It's the one of Uncle Sam where he's pointing and he's saying, "I want you for the U.S. Army."
That's right.
That poster is featured in our exhibit. Interesting story about that is that the original version of that, he created a version of it for World War One when we were involved in World War One, and then when World War Two came about, he updated it a little bit, and it became equally prominent and famous in World War II as well. So that's a very familiar image, and we do have that poster in our exhibit. You were talking about war bonds. I think the most famous of the posters created to promote the sale of war bonds during World War II were the ones by Norman Rockwell.
Oh, yeah.
The famous Four Freedoms.
Oh, yeah.
And that was basically the Four Freedoms were something that FDR articulated in a speech to Congress in 1941. These were the things that he said that the United States, what was at stake in World War II. And those four freedoms, he said, were freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Well, Norman Rockwell, the famous artist, picked up on those ideas that Roosevelt articulated, and he created four paintings, very famous paintings, that depicted the four freedoms. And then those paintings were then featured on these posters that were used to raise money for the war effort during World War II.
Oh, wow. That's a famous one. I've got to come just to see that.
Those four, when you first come into the exhibit, those are the first four that you see.
Yeah. What about Wyeth? He used to do quite a bit of artwork that had to do with that time period.
Sure, M.C. Wyeth, probably one of the most, along with Rockwell, probably the most famous illustrator of the 20th century. And he did some well-known posters for World War II as well. In fact, when you come to the exhibit, the big image that you first see that sort of symbolizes the whole exhibit is taken from one of his wartime posters.
Oh, really? What kind of themes did he do?
He was involved in the war bonds effort as well. War bonds were really important because, of course, World War II was a global war, and the costs involved in paying for the war were huge. We have a figure that we use in the exhibit. The war cost about $300 billion to fight. Well, that would be about $4 trillion in current dollars.
Wow.
So to pay for all that, they of course, raised taxes on corporations and on individuals, but they also went out and got people to buy war bonds, basically. Uh-huh. And so they had these big rallies around the country, and they had these colorful posters that encouraged people, as their patriotic duty, to buy a war bond. And eventually, the war bonds did raise a tremendous amount of money towards the war effort.
Yeah, that's... any other artists you want to mention that, people
can know
about?
Well, another one that I think that's interesting is people know him mainly by his nickname, but not by his real name, Dr. Zeus, who was a man named Theodore Geisel. He did some posters for the government during World War II. Also, Walt Disney, the Walt Disney Company, did a lot of posters for the government. So, the war posters, in general, not just war bonds, but there were all sorts of subjects they got into. They were able to tap into the talents of some of the best illustrators and graphic designers and artists in the country.
Wow. I didn't know that Geisel was, he was an artist, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, of course, the illustrations and all those books that he did were done by him.
Oh, that was by him. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So we're going to learn a lot when we come to this exhibit. It sounds like it's pretty big. This is a big thing.
Yeah, no, I think it's 158 posters in the exhibit, and it fills the gallery, and I think, really colorful, inventive, interesting variety of styles. We get into all kinds of subjects. We've been talking a lot about war bonds, but they had the posters about for all the military recruitments, so for all different branches of the services.
Uh-huh.
They had posters for people being involved in civil defense, air raid drills in their neighborhoods, efforts to raise awareness about gathering scrap metal to use in defense factories. There were these big scrap drives, and they used posters to get people involved in that. The Red Cross, the USO, all sorts of subjects that were involved in getting people at home involved in the war effort.
Yeah.
And so posters were used to try to get people to understand where they could volunteer, where they could help out.
Uh-huh.
You know, again, the war touched so many different aspects of life for people here back in the U.S. It wasn't just the people who went overseas to fight. For example, rationing. You had all kinds of products that were needed by the military that were rationed, and so the government had posters that informed people about how they needed to deal with rationing of things like gas, sugar, coffee, butter, meat. All these products were in short supply during the war, and again, these posters were aimed to try to educate people about how they can contribute and how these programs worked.
Was there Victory Garden stuff that started back then?
Oh, yeah. We have some great posters related to Victory Gardens, and the Victory Gardens were an effort to get people to take their backyards and or public areas, park lands and things like that, and to grow food on them so that they could help with the food needs of the country during a time when we're shipping a lot of our food overseas, again, to support our troops overseas. During the war, over 20 million Victory Gardens were planted.
Wow.
And at their height, they were producing 8 million tons of produce a year. That's a lot of
Wow, 8 million tons a year.
Yeah.
Wow. This is a great way to bring the kids and really show them history. It's
oh, absolutely.
Beautiful.
Again, and you see so many different, as I said, aspects of life, everyday life, that were affected by the war here, and including a number of the posters were aimed at children, because children were involved in war bond purchases. They could buy bonds because the bonds were available in small denominations, so even children could contribute. Children were also encouraged to help out with Victory Gardens. They were encouraged to help out, I mentioned earlier, with gathering up scrap metal in their communities and bringing it to a central location so that it could be taken off to factories and used to produce tanks and guns and things like that. So everybody was involved. It was young and old, including children, in this home front effort during the war.
It's nice when everybody pulls together, isn't it? It's a great
It was a time when everybody did in this country, because again, you're fighting a global war.
Yep.
Roosevelt was always saying, it's not just about the soldiers and sailors overseas. Everyone at home, on what they called the home front, had a role as well.
Were there any themes in there that had to do with sacrifice? Because, you think about it, that was the common thing. Everybody had to sacrifice. But did they actually make posters and develop
that? A lot of the posters used that word a lot. And I think I talked on some of the areas where that was emphasized. But common sacrifice and seeing yourself as a sort of a part of the war effort. I mean, for example, people who worked in defense factories, a lot of the posters would refer to them as soldiers of production. So the idea is that you're a soldier, even though you're not fighting overseas, you're producing all these goods that are going to be used.
Oh, I see.
So
you
have an important role as well.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. So that runs till the end of the year. So there's time for people to stop over.
It's open until December 31st. It's been up and we're getting a lot of good reaction from the public, and it is really a colorful, interesting exhibit. I encourage you to come out and see it.
How big is the property?
The overall property?
Yeah.
It's quite large. We are the library and museum are on a portion of what used to be the Roosevelt Estate, and that estate was many, many hundreds of acres. It's not quite as large now, but there is a lot of land here, and we actually have trails that go down to the river, trails that go around the property. So, it's a wonderful place to come, not just to learn the history and to tour the home and come to the museum, but actually you can wander around the grounds. It's quite beautiful. There's a beautiful overlook of the Hudson River from behind the Roosevelt home. So again, it's people come here just to experience the natural environment.
All right. So there's gardens outside, and you can spend some time outside too. It's open to the public, in other
words. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I saw a picture of. It was a statue of FDR and Eleanor sitting at a table. And it was such a great, it looked like they were just sitting there thinking, wow.
That's right outside our visitor center. And people love to get their picture taken with them, because there's a bench that's part of the sculpture, and you can sit down right next to Franklin and Eleanor and get your photo taken with them.
Oh.
That That sculpture, which, like I said, is right outside our visitor center, is actually based on a photograph that was taken of the president and first lady right here in Hyde Park. So it really puts you right in the moment, right in the place.
Yeah. Are there other statuary around, or that's the main?
That's the most prominent one, though. Uh-huh. There are other. There's a bust of FDR in front of the library. We uh-huh. also have a bust of Winston Churchill, his great wartime ally from Great Britain. We have a bust of Churchill. So there are other pieces of sculpture on the property, but I think the one that everyone notices is the one that you mentioned because it's right outside our visitor center.
Very, very nice. Now, if somebody was going to, they wanted to eat, can they have a picnic there, or do they have to go to a local restaurant?
We do have a small concession where people can buy lunch. There are also picnic tables on the property, so if you bring your own food, you can picnic here on the site. There are other options too. There are also restaurants nearby, uh-huh. but certainly if you want to just bring a picnic lunch and sit at one of the tables outside, people do it all the time.
All right, and then the concession is more like sandwiches, or are they more the burger and hot dog thing?
Yeah, you can get sandwiches and sodas, and you know, certainly a variety of lunch items there.
Okay, that's great. So that's all right. So that's available, and that's 7 days a week. So that works out pretty well. Anything else you want to tell people? Like if they want to bring a school group or a bus group, a phone number, your website.
Sure, you can go to our website easily. You just put FDR Library into your browser, and you can find all the information that you need regarding who to contact here for bringing school groups or for a group that's not a school group to the library. We definitely have groups that are not connected to a school that come here.
Yeah, the senior groups and all.
Mm-hmm.
Is it pretty well packed that you need to be calling 6 months ahead, or how far in advance do you think is appropriate?
I think I would say during the peak months, like right now, a little advance notice would be good, but you can contact us and we'll try to accommodate you no matter when you call.
Okay, that's great. And then and with the bus group, then there would be somebody who would be with the group?
There's all sorts of coordination that occurs. We work with the groups that come here. Again, the information is available on our website, and visitors just go to the site and you'll find the information you need, the people you need to contact.
All right, that sounds great. And anything else you you want to tell everybody that maybe we forgot to mention?
Well, I think the only other thing I mentioned is that every year we do a new special exhibit. I've been talking a lot about the one that's open through the end of this year, but next year we're going to have a major exhibit. It's going to commemorate the 75th anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Europe that occurred on June 6, 1944. We're going to have an exhibit that opens in May and stays open through the rest of the year that's going to focus on D-Day and on the special relationship that developed between Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, who were the two great leaders behind that invasion.
Wow.
So that's a major exhibit we're going to be doing here. It's going to have all kinds of interesting documents and artifacts that relate to the president and to Winston Churchill and to the invasion. And again, I encourage people to come out and see that special exhibit, which opens May 10th.
May 10th. We got to mark our calendars. That's going to be a spectacular one.
Mm-hmm.
Good heads up on that. Do you ever do talks? I mean, when you talk about a gallery, there's like seating there, or is it like an open space?
There is seating throughout the galleries for people who just want to take a rest. We sometimes do tours, guided tours of the exhibits, the special exhibits that I'll do. And we also have a lot of public events here at the library, public speakers who come and talk about new books on the Roosevelts or movies about the Roosevelts or the Roosevelt era. So that we have a very active public programs that go on all year round. Again, go to our website and you'll find information about things that are upcoming. So,
great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that because certainly come to see the museum, but come back again and see some of the public events that we do here.
Yeah, listen to the talks and everything. That sounds like, you know, quite a community, open
Yeah, we get a lot of people who come just for our public events. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, listen, thank you so much, Herman. I appreciate your help, and I hope you have a wonderful season. And I'm going to get over and look at those posters. They really sound wonderful.
All right, thank you.
Take care. That's a wrap for this week, folks. Check out, go over to FDR site and see what's going on. It looks like it's going to be a great fall. And don't forget that area of Hyde Park, there's a brewery, there's nice restaurants. Walk around town, a lot of little shops. It should be a terrific trip.